the challenge with this is, and I didn't mention the budget on the first one, ticketing hall is about $32 million. This is $300 million, up from $225 million, which is where we were 9 months ago. And that is the challenge we're all dealing with now, with construction cost increases, supply chain disruptions. We're not sure how we're going to pay for this at this point. We've kind of got to about 90% design. We're kind of regrouping on funding, trying to figure out how to reach a deal with our rental car partners. We have more rental car companies that want to enter this market, and the rental cars know they need space, but that is a big number for rental cars in a region this size. I'm confident we will figure it out. It's the right location. It's the right facility. It's 30 to 50 years worth of capacity for this region, but it is not going to get cheaper or easier to do, that's for sure. The biggest project are two new concourses. We spent a year and a half evaluating the 23 gates that we have right now. If you've been flying through the airport since 1980, you've been using those two concourses, concourses B and C, as you know them. They are old and tired and way too small for the size of aircraft that are serving Northern Nevada now. These concourses were built for the 737-200, which held 120 people. Some of us probably flew on them back in the early 80s. And now you hear talk about the 737 MAX, 7, 8, 9. The MAX 10 holds 220 people. So the same hold room that you're standing in, waiting for them to call the flight to board, has been there for 43 years, and the aircraft park outside the window is almost twice as big now. So these concourses just aren't serving our needs today, and certainly not going to get better in the future. So we made the decision to plan to tear them both down and build two new concourses. We'll increase gate size by 5. We'll go up to 28 gates, which allows us to push more aircraft out, especially early in the morning. Every airline wants to push every aircraft as early as they can because the aircraft generates money all day long. That's how an airline gets its return on business. So everybody wants to leave early, and we're limited in gate capacity in that regard. So this will increase our gates, increase the hold room size, really improve the customer and employee experience and the whole facility. We're in the process of hiring the architectural firm that will design them right now. These are artist renderings. We're surrounded by beautiful mountains like you are here, and good airports take advantage of those viewscapes. We want people to realize how beautiful Northern Nevada is when they're waiting to depart or the minute they get off that aircraft. We need a lot more food and beverage offerings. It's way underserved right now. We want local food and beverage offerings from our region. We need a lot more room for that as well. The hold rooms will almost double in size. So in addition to more gates, everything will just be more spacious, more light. There'll be outdoor space. Once you go past the security checkpoint, that's something a lot of airports are doing now because people want to be able to step outside, especially in a region where you have 300 days of sunshine a year. Whether it's cold or hot, still the ability to go outside and get that fresh air is really great part of the experience that we're missing right now. So that will definitely be part of it. It'll also be better for the aircraft. We'll push out the concourses away from each other so we can do dual aircraft in and out. Just makes it quicker and easier. Sometimes you arrive and you land, and the captain gets on and says, we're waiting for the gate, or somebody's in the alley, it's going to be 15 minutes. We don't want that to happen here anymore, so this will fix that as well. An important part of all this is art. We've stood up a fantastic art program. We have a committee of fine arts experts from Northern Nevada helping us find where are the places where we can feature local artists or artists that tell the story around the history and heritage of Northern Nevada and the whole and state of Nevada. So we're really excited. This is something that we do a little bit of right now, but we just kind of dabble in it. It'll be great going forward when you have new space. Art is a really important part of it. These are the big projects that I've talked about. Other projects that are not on the airfield or in the terminal, a new airport exit, and this may be something we do in conjunction with a ground transportation center. Everything is off Plum Lane for us, and so you circle all the way back around, and it's where all the entrance and exit occurs. We call that a single point of failure in the transportation engineering business, and we've had challenges there. When you get any disruption, you can't get in or you can't get out. So pulling those things apart and having an entrance and exit that are separate from each other, a more traditional airport loop is something that we're aiming for as well. We need more parking. All of this is designed to get us more parking. When we build a new rental car center, the rental cars will move out of that garage that's right across from the terminal building. That frees up 700 spaces. We're also moving ourselves out of the building. Our police station and administrative facilities will move out into a new building. That allows us to lease that space for customers and tenants that have to be in the airport building. We don't necessarily have to be there. This is our timeline. Everything in blue is design. Everything in yellow is construction. This is a lot for an organization of 290 people. It is like nothing we've ever taken on before. It's going to take us most of the rest of this decade to do this work. But we, like I said, it won't get cheaper and it won't get easier, and the customer impacts will only grow if we don't take this on right now. And the goal is by late 20s, we will be largely done with this program, and it'll be a phenomenal experience for decades to come. And they will really thank us in the 2030s that we took this on, because if we don't, it'll be a really challenging airport environment. The price tag on this is right at $1 billion, which is just an incredible amount of investment into our infrastructure. It comes from many different sources. I don't have $1 billion to spend, that's for sure, but we are partnering with the airlines on this. Our primary airline partners have just agreed to a new 10-year lease extension here, so they're committing to our market for the next 10 years. They can't leave, even if they have a really bad year. So they are backing it financially in many ways. We're, like I said, competing for federal dollars. Bipartisan infrastructure law funding is something we're competing for. The rental car center is a public-private partnership. So all of these, you know, we're looking for money in all kinds of different locations. But there's also more infrastructure funding out there than there ever has been, as you all know. So we want to also take advantage of this window of opportunity to really make a strong case to the FAA and everybody else of the need of air travel and air travel infrastructure in Northern Nevada. Our federal delegation, all of them, are really backing us on this and have been very supportive. Oh, sure. And this is a short video of kicking off the whole program. So thank you for your time. That is the end of the presentation. I'm happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair, but really appreciate the time today.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for taking the time to come up and educate us on what's going on down there. I was about to complain that we didn't have any seats on your board, but fair enough. No elected officials.
Duly noted. Thank you.
We do want to be a part of it. We are definitely part of Northern Nevada. So, but anyway, totally understood. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for the folks?
I'm curious. You didn't mention runways, and I'm curious if there was a runway study, and are there adequate runway access for all the traffic you're anticipating?
Great question. Thank you. One of the reasons we've been able to pivot to the terminal and the land side is because our airfield is in great shape. We have a tremendous amount of airfield capacity. Honestly, we're using just a fraction of it in terms of landings and takeoffs. We have the two parallel runways and then the crosswind runway. Our primary runway, 11,000 feet long, serves most of our needs on the hottest of days. It's a challenge, but honestly, we'd probably need a 13,000-foot runway to serve every need that we have, and that's not really physically possible. Instrument landing system, satellite-based navigation, we have all of those things. So you start with the airfield, and we have a great airfield system, and that's one of the reasons why we're very bullish on our capabilities here, is because of that strong airfield. Thank you.
Well, that's good information. How about up in Stead? Do you see any future expansion of your Stead properties?
You know, I don't focus on it in this presentation, but we're putting a lot of attention towards Stead. We have 3,000 acres of industrially zoned land that's ready for development, just missing infrastructure, just that little piece, right? So we are working hard on how to advance that. We do expect general aviation aircraft growth to continue there. We're working to get hangars built there. Again, we have a waiting list of aircraft that would like to be based at the Stead Airport. We also are open for business in terms of aeronautical development. We think drone manufacturing, drone testing are definitely in the future. It's a perfect location for that. I often get asked about air cargo out of the Stead Airport. We talk to the air cargo operators about that. They love the proximity to the 580 and the 80, quick in and out access there. But I wouldn't ever rule out a small parcel service, especially with UAVs coming. The Stead Airport will certainly play a role there as well. So we are bullish on Stead as well. They have different roles in the region. We want to maximize both airports as much as we can.
Thank you for that.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Mitchell, any questions, comments?
Thank you. Actually, I was curious about Stead as well, so thanks for answering that. And we won't take too much time because the chains might be needed again if we keep you too long up here. I'm just kidding. It's all going to melt down. That's how we do it here. Yeah. In the springtime. It doesn't stick. So, just curious about, and I know this is not necessarily the focus of this presentation, but regional coordination as far as smaller municipal or private airports around, specifically kind of in the air cargo space, is there coordination between the airport authority and the surrounding region, or are you mostly focused on what you're doing?
I would say the coordination conversation, that's partly what this effort is. Tomorrow I'll be in Fernley. Last month I was in Carson City. We want to make sure all of the primary players in our catchment area know what our plans are, what our capabilities are. I know there's been a conversation around air cargo. That's partially why we include it here, that if people want to have a conversation around air cargo, we're certainly happy to have that. I can tell you, we've learned just how capitally intensive it is and what the demands are from the FedExes and UPSs are of the world. Interestingly enough, since the pandemic, air cargo has flattened out in terms of just total weight, and it's actually trending down a little bit right now for us. We're not quite sure why that is. Partially, I think it was just everybody was ordering everything online, and the trucking industry was overwhelmed, and a lot of it shifted to air cargo temporarily during the pandemic. So now I think we've normalized again. It's more about our organic growth as a region, what makes the most sense. We're certainly engaged in the surface transportation conversations around Story County and Points East, and trick access to the airport is as important to us as it is anybody. The bottleneck in the 80 is a concern, but there's obviously a lot of conversations going on about that. We'll play whatever role we can that's useful. And so that's about as far as that's gone. With a $1 billion program, it eats up most of my day, quite frankly, most of the days. But there's always room to talk about whatever is important in the region. But we also are trying to move this thing along as fast as we can because of the passenger growth. You know, there's just, so when you just drive around all the different regions, and I don't mean just around Reno and Sparks. This is why we're out making these rounds. It's the growth out here in Story County, Churchill County, Douglas County, that we are really dialing in, that those are our customers at the airport, whether they're ordering things that come via air cargo or they're getting on Southwest or United American Delta, you name it, we see the customers coming.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Appreciate it.
All right. I only have one question for you, Mr. Griffin, and I'm sure you were not anticipating this one, but is there any way to salvage the Reno Air Races?
I wasn't anticipating that one,
right.
But I should be. This is something we've talked about a lot, and I will just tell you, that was the conversation that went on for a number of months between us and the races leadership. The challenge of the races has grown every year, and it's not a single thing that kind of led us to this point. I will say the insurance industry has changed significantly for the worse since the onset of the war in Ukraine, which you think, how is there a connection between the war in Ukraine and the Reno Air Races? There is, and it's just the ability to buy insurance that protects us and them from a mass casualty incident of some kind is almost unachievable at this point. In addition to that, it is development around the airport. It is competing events that have seen the gate reduced to some degree. We're in a conversation with them. Obviously, for this year, it's the last year of the races. We hope everybody comes out and enjoys it one of the 5 days that they're out there. Next year is their 60th anniversary. They are intending an air show type event. And we're hopeful maybe that will be something that carries on into the future, where you still bring great jet demonstration teams here, civilian performers, the Blues, the Angels, some sort of historical component that honors the races. They have 60 years of racing content. We would love to see some sort of historical society formed or a museum established where you can re-watch these races and just enjoy the rich heritage that it is. But in terms of a continuation of the racing, we don't see that right now here. I know they're hoping maybe they can find some small version of it that takes place somewhere else. I have not heard recently from them whether that actually has a chance or not. The insurance industry is the same challenge whether you're in Reno or the Midwest. It doesn't matter where you're at. And that seems to be getting worse, not better. So it's unfortunate, but we also kind of reached the same point at the same time, and it was a really amicable conversation. I'll just say that. There's no animosity whatsoever. We understand how important they have been to the history of the Stead Airport. It is intrinsic to the identity of the Stead Airport. So we're hoping in different ways it can continue, but we don't see the active racing continuing.
Appreciate the honest answer.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I was actually asked by a constituent this weekend.
Sure.
Perfect timing you're here.
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
Since we don't get this opportunity, does anybody have any questions for the team from Reno Airport? All right. Thank you very much for both of you coming up. Appreciate it. You should be just fine. The snow's done. Right on time.
Thank you very much for that. Appreciate it.
You have a wonderful week. Thank you. All right. Moving right along to item number 19. This is discussion for possible action. We have a presentation by the Nevada Department of Sentencing Policy about the Nevada Local Justice Reinvestment Coordinating Council, also known as the NLJRCC, and consideration and possible appointment of a Story County representative to serve on that council. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right, you got the floor.
Perfect. Thank you. So my name is Victoria Gonzalez, and I'm the executive director of the Nevada Department of Sentencing Policy. I've included some slides with your materials today, and so I'll just reference those numbers, the number of the slide that I'm referring to. So on slide two, I have a history of our agency and who we are. You can see we're a small agency that was created back in 2019. We were created as an independent agency to collect criminal justice data to assist the Nevada Sentencing Commission and help them in making data-driven recommendations. Also, the Nevada Sentencing Commission was previously in the legislature and was moved to the executive branch in our agency. Also, a point of reference that's important to keep in mind with my presentation today is AB 236, which was enacted in 2019. This was an omnibus criminal justice reform bill, as many of you are aware. And among other things that it made changes to our criminal justice system across the board, it required the Nevada Sentencing Commission to collect specific data to measure the outcomes of AB 236. It also created the Nevada Local Justice Reinvestment Coordinating Council. And so on slide two, I just have our mission statement as far as what we're in place to do. We are a nonpartisan agency, and we work with everyone in the criminal justice system in collecting data in order to make sure that the lawmakers, the stakeholders, and the public can make data-driven recommendations and ensure that our criminal justice system is fair. On slide four, I have some information about the Sentencing Commission and the Coordinating Council and their relationships. So our staff, the Nevada Department of Sentencing Policy, supports the Nevada Sentencing Commission and the Coordinating Council. I just refer to them in shorthand because, as we just heard, the acronym and our name is a mouthful. So the Sentencing Commission, we support both the Sentencing Commission and the Coordinating Council. Just so you know, the Sentencing Commission, they meet monthly, and the Coordinating Council meets as needed. The Coordinating Council meets as needed. And which has right now been quarterly. They right now meet quarterly, the Coordinating Council is. So just generally, the Sentencing Commission is statutorily required to evaluate the effectiveness and fiscal impact of sentencing and corrections in our state, and then make data-driven recommendations based on the data they find. And then also, as at a high level, as I mentioned, collect and assess data resulting from the enactment of AB 236. The Coordinating Council has a very small statute as far as its duties are concerned, and I will get into more detail about that. But in general, the Nevada Local Justice Reinvestment Coordinating Council is required to advise the Sentencing Commission on actions needed to implement AB 236 at the local level. So one of the concerns was, as AB 236 made all of these changes at the state level, of course, that's going to have an impact at the local level. So the Coordinating Council is in place to assist with providing feedback back to the Sentencing Commission about how are things looking in your criminal justice system in each of the local jurisdictions. Additionally, the Coordinating Council is required to administer grants to reduce recidivism as funded by the costs avoided. On slide five, I have what I have identified as the administrative mandates of the Coordinating Council. So each member of the Coordinating Council serves two-year terms, and so we are almost done with their first two-year term, which will expire June 30th of 2023. The Coordinating Council chair is appointed by the chair of the Sentencing Commission, and the Sentencing Commission is required to provide staff support to the Coordinating Council. So that's us, the Nevada Department of Sentencing Policy. On slide six is what I identify as the substantive mandates of the Coordinating Council. So, substantively, the Coordinating Council is required to identify programming and treatment needs at the local level in each of the counties that would help reduce recidivism and support those individuals who are involved in the criminal justice system. Secondly, the Coordinating Council is required to provide grants for programs and treatments to reduce recidivism. On slide seven, I have some information about the Coordinating Council. So this is the current meeting schedule that we have planned for the rest of the year. The next meeting is on May 10th, then August 2nd, and November 1st. All of our meetings are virtual. We hold them on Zoom. You can visit our website to see past meetings and the current membership. I have references here that the chair of the Coordinating Council currently is Garrett Pruitt from Carson City. As many of you know, probably know, he works for the district attorney's office. And then the vice chair is Denny Bird. She's from Humboldt County, and she works in pretrial services in Humboldt. On slide, I believe that's eight. Yes, on slide eight, the details about how the members are appointed. So each member of the Coordinating Council is appointed by the Board of County Commissioners. One member from each county is appointed, with two members from Clark and two members from Washoe. So it's a 19-member Coordinating Council. The current membership that we have on the Coordinating Council is from all aspects of the criminal justice system. So we have, and we also have county commissioners. So we have a district, we have district attorneys, as I mentioned, we have pretrial services. We have defense attorneys. We have those working from the county commission, so they can represent the county. So law enforcement. So we're looking for all the type of membership that we're looking for is anyone involved in the criminal justice system who can help be a point person for your county to provide information back to the Coordinating Council on what the needs are in your county for the criminal justice system as it's being implemented in your county. Members can be reappointed. As I mentioned, there's a two-year cycle. The last thing I want to mention is what's most important is the grant funding that the Coordinating Council will administer. So currently before the legislature is AB 388, which would provide a $3 million appropriation to the Coordinating Council to administer grants. The purpose of these grants is to provide support for the local jurisdictions to provide treatment and services that would reduce recidivism.